Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 12th, 2011. That means Friday is the 13th. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, homebrewer Don Osborne shares a couple of beers brewed only with Brettanomyces. Will they be too funky? Will they bring the barnyard and the shower drain? Stay tuned and see. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Also, you can find our brewer's logbooks to help you log and track 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. And we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, too. I'm going to keep the opening remarks brief because we covered a lot of ground. First of all, the deadline for the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment on Glassware, Tasting Beer in Different Glasses, is this weekend, May 15th. So have a party, get your friends over, collect some data, you know, just all for science. Don't have any fun because it's serious business. Also, I realized that I neglected to mention the link for the data forum last week. That is at basicbrewing.com/experiment. Earlier this week, I brewed my beer for the other collaborative experiment that we're running, whether rehydrating dry yeast has an effect one way or the other on your brew. And those carboys are bubbling along nicely. No spoilers. The deadline for that one is July 15th. Going into the mailbag, this one is from Jeroen. He says, I was watching your latest video podcast and just had to make a comment on the beer ban at the UK royal wedding. I had the opportunity once to attend a reception at the Royal Palace in Brussels, hosted by the King of Belgium. Well, he only served Belgian beer and no wine. Just thought you'd like to know. Well, very nice. Awesome. I bet it was good beer, too. Beer is fit for royalty, you know. At least some beers are fit for royalty. Arch also writes in after seeing our latest video podcast. Arch says, I spent the last week helping old friends and new friends through the devastation of a tornado. I took a few minutes to relax this evening and watched your video of the 28th of April. May I suggest that your webmaster in Austin place a donation link on your site? After all, beer drinkers are a generous lot. And I wrote back to Arch, and he suggested one of the suggestions was the American Red Cross. So if you go to basicbrewing.com, there is a banner that will take you to the Red Cross donation page if you want to help out. You know, we've got a lot of flooding coming up as well that people are going to need help with, too. And so if you click on that banner, you'll go to the donation page, and we do not get a share of that. I'm not that greedy. Or you can just go to redcross.org directly to help out with that. This comes from Don Osborne, who you will hear in just a couple of minutes. Don tested out Sean Terrell's new refractometer correction formula. Don says, and I'm paraphrasing here, the final specific gravity of a beer that he was working on was 10.15, and the final Brix was 9.5. So he measured with a hydrometer and the refractometer after fermentation. Don says, a couple of the calculators on the internet said my specific gravity would be either 1.007 or 1.008 based on the final Brix reading of 9.5. But Sean's calculator said that my specific gravity reading would be 1.0146 or 10.15, which is what it was. Don says, so I would say that yes, his calculator gave me a more correct specific gravity reading when I inputted the final Brix reading. as well as the original ones. I guess that means I might be able to rely on Brick's readings for fairly accurate specific gravity values, but what sample am I supposed to drink? Good point. I think I'll stick with the hydrometer post-fermentation, you know, because you get to sip the contents of the little tube there. Not much to drink off the refractometer. Good news there for Sean and his new formula. Finally, Noam from Israel wrote with this. He said, since you mentioned National Homebrew Day on your last show, I thought I would drop you a line and let you know how we celebrated it here in our neck of the woods. So we got together for a second annual brew party, which we hold every first Friday in May. And he sent a link to the website with lots of pictures. It just looked like a beautiful day. And Noam says, by the way, although many of the brewers brewed a wheat beer, either Hefeweizen or wit, there was one guy who brewed a James Spencer 100% wheat beer. Brew in a bag, of course. Well, cool. That's awesome. I hope that you'll let me know how that beer turned out. I've certainly liked all the 100% wheat beers that I've done so far. So it's fun to hear of somebody else trying that technique. Well, now let's get on to the interview. I do appreciate hearing from everybody. And there's also some more interactions on Facebook as well. But let's get to the interview this week. Homebrewer Don Osborne sent us a couple of beers brewed with nothing but Brettanomyces, which is sometimes known as a wild yeast, although here lately it's being tamed by more and more brewers who are getting some nice funk in their brews. So I invited Andy Sparks of thehomebrewery.com to join me for the tasting. Well, Don Osborne, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Glad to be here again, James.
And here in the studio is Andy Sparks.
It's always a treat to be here, James.
I asked Andy in because he's been playing with Brett a bit as well. But before we get into that, this a weird coincidence today, Don. I got a tweet from Luke on Twitter, who goes as RedDragon83, who asked me if I had done a dandelion wine before.
Okay. Yes.
He said that his dandelion wine looked green in the fermenter, even though he used only the yellow parts of the dandelion. And I said, odd that you should mention it, because I'm going to be talking to Don Osborne tonight, and we had him on the show talking about his dandelion wine. And he said that he had listened to that show, and he got the inspiration to do it from you.
Hey, that's great.
So how weird is that?
Somewhat weird, James.
I mean, I hardly ever get a question about dandelion wine, and on
right.
The day that you're not masquerading as Red Dragon 83, are you?
Not that you know.
So was your dandelion wine, was it green in the fermenter?
It was a little bit of a greenish, murky yellow color. That could be from, even if you are using only the heads, you still might be getting some of the green on the bottom of the head. I know I did, but maybe just the yellow flowers, maybe, I mean, this may sound weird, but maybe somehow they just turn it to be a tinge of green. But what he will find is when it's done fermenting, a lot of stuff will settle out.
Mm.
And what you are left with, it is similar to beer or wine or mead, but it will be a lot clearer, and some of that color will probably settle out.
Well, I have to say that to this day, yours was the best dandelion wine that I've ever had.
Yes, and how many have you had?
Well, just the one, but still.
Well,
but it was good.
It was good. If I would have thought about it, I should have sent another bottle down, but I didn't think about it.
Well, maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
But you did send some other beers. You sent one, and one of the beers that I tried was a smoked Helles, and I tweeted about that, and I went to your website to try to find the recipe, and it was a tasty beer, and I found that you had done a video on YouTube, and you've got a whole YouTube channel filled with all kinds of stuff.
That is true.
And what's your call name on YouTube?
It is one word, Don Osborne, and the last name is Osborn, And I've received a lot of very encouraging comments over the last few years that the things that I have posted have given a lot of people a lot of ideas. Kind of my biggest claim to fame is helping people see that you can get into all grain brewing without a lot of expensive equipment and without doing an 8-hour brew day.
Well, there
and
you go.
So I always appreciate when people say, "Hey, man, I saw your video and it really helped me get into all grain brewing." So yeah, those are out there.
Now, one technique that you used on this smoked Helles was you did your mash in the evening, and then you held that overnight, and you did the boil the next day. And I've gotten questions from people I'm a busy guy, I've got a family. I don't have time to do a full brew day in one day, full all-grain brew day in one day. Can I split the process up? And you not only did it with that beer, but you've done it with other beers as well. How does that work?
I wish I knew where I got the idea from, but just like you're saying, I guess the idea is just kind of out there in people's minds, especially when you don't want to commit half of a weekend day, especially if you do have kids, to your brew day. So it works in the way that you do your mash, you do a mash out if that's what you're doing, or however you do your mash, you collect all of your wort, and I put it into a brew pot. I just collect it into my brew pot as normal, and then what I do, I don't heat it up additionally at that point, although a person could. But what I do is I take the wort that is probably about 150, 160. I try to raise the temperature as close to 168 as I can, but just, you know, assuming there's a little heat loss in the process. And I cover it with a bunch of blankets. I go to bed, and usually pretty much kind of right away in the morning, I get going on it. Otherwise, if I need to do some things in the morning, I can return to it in the late morning. And the temperature is usually going to still be in the 130s. And I've learned to not pick my lid off with my bare hand because it's that hot.
Wow.
So it has not cooled down so much that any bacteria or wild yeast are going to start consuming the sugar at all. And even if there were any in there, they're going to be boiled still. So if anybody is listening that knows why this is not a good practice, I would be curious, because other than maybe if it has something to do with the break or some other kind of component of the proteins or something like that, I don't know why this is a bad process, but it splits the brew day up into about 2 hours at night, which is easy to do after the kids go down, and then about 3 hours the next day.
Now, Andy had a question about, you know, the enzyme activity overnight.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if, you know, the enzymes can clearly go a little higher than 160, you know, and you know, so I'm wondering if you could end up having a beer that would be slightly different just because of the fact that it had the enzymes working it in the wort, you know, overnight.
That's,
I just don't know.
Yeah, it's possible. That would be interesting to have somebody chime in. And like I say, when I add my mash out water, let's say I'm mashing at 152, I add my mash out water, I do generally get the temperature up to close to 168. I collect my first runnings. Then my sparge water, when I add that back in, my second runnings are pretty much always at around, you know, 168, 170. So I don't know how long it takes to denature most of those enzymes at that temperature, but they're going to be at that temperature for, you know, I don't know, half hour or more until it slowly kind of cools down. But it's still covered in, you know, all those blankets. And are you saying that maybe enzymes can even work higher than those temperatures?
You know,
too?
They all work in ranges. They're all kind of curves. So
okay.
I would assume that, you know, as you drive the temperature closer to 170 degrees, you're getting closer to 100%, but probably not at 100%. I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I mean, I'd like to know from a real pro how high the range really goes, you know.
But just in a practical experience, I have never had any effects, negative effects on a beer that I can attribute to, holding it overnight. I can't even tell what beer I did that to or not, as I'm just, you know, drinking my beers. I do try to record it in my notes in case something ever does come up, but it's just a nice way to split up the brew day.
Well, and the beer that I had was not overly thin. You know, I didn't pick out any defects in the beer other than it wasn't as carbonated as I would have wanted it to be, but it was a keg fill, so that's you know, maybe to be expected. But it was not a thin, watery beer.
No, my beers are not thin or watery. I hope.
Nice burly beers.
That's right. I like the delicate beers too, but even those, I mean, I'm sure I've done my German Pilsner, my Maybach, my Helles, those types of beers with that same process, and they taste just as I want them to.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear from others out there as well, if they do this on a regular basis, and if they've done, you know, side-by-side comparison with beers that they have fermented or that they have brewed all in one day,
stretched,
and then, you know, saving it overnight. So
that would be another experiment, I suppose.
Yeah, well, there you
go. Always experimenting, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I mean, who knows? Who knows what effect it would have? I mean, we can only conjecture. We can only guess what could happen.
Well, maybe somebody will chime in.
But the reason why we're here is that when I was up at Minneapolis at the National Homebrewers Conference almost a year ago,
yeah,
you were there, and we got to meet in person. And you answered the call. We Steve and I were asking where we could get Surly Abrasive, because we had stumbled upon it in a little cafe close to the Surly Brewery, and you know, I fell in love with that beer. It's an awesome double IPA.
Yeah.
And we discovered that it was fairly rare, and so we put out the call, you know, where can we get more Surly Abrasive? And you not only answered the call, you called the hotel room and said, I've got some right here. So we
That's right.
We met and purchased the beer from you, and we were and learned where you got it, and we were able to get some more. So I imagine, and we brought some home to Andy too.
Yeah, thanks. It was yeah, quite tasty.
But also,
yeah, people definitely want to try that beer, and I'm always happy to help.
It was wonderful. But also, you said, I want to do a Brett experiment, and would you be interested in talking about that? And I said, well, yeah. So you did. And what we've got here is two beers in front of us. What did you do?
What did I do? What I did was, like many people out there, your journey in beer takes different courses, but often you end up eventually at the sour beers, the wild beers, the funky beers. I mean, isn't that just kind of how it seems to go?
Yeah. Your palate just gets – you blow your palate in every category except the sours, and then you go there.
So I have had an interest in these beers for a while, and you have had people on your show, namely Michael Tonsmeyer, who has made some of these beers. So – he was one guy that I had heard about that had been doing this, but then I definitely want to mention another a paper that is out on the internet. I can send you the link, but it's pretty easy to find if you just Google this paper called Horse of a Different Color. And it is this paper that a bunch of people made beers with only Brettanomyces, and they used different strains of Brettanomyces, and then they sent the beers to each other, and then they did a chat, and the parts of the chat are recorded in this paper, and they're just describing what they're tasting. And when I read that, I believe actually Michael Tonsmeyer was a part of that too, but also like Tommy Arthur, I think, is in that.
Wow.
And then a few other people. And one thing I just couldn't believe was they were just talking about these beers like they were quite normal tasting. They were often commenting, saying, well, this is much more sort of normal tasting than I would have expected when you make a beer with only Brettanomyces as the as the fermenting agent. And so when I read that, I thought, okay, I'm going to do this someday. And it was probably, it was at least a couple years later that I finally just was like, okay, this is it. This is happening. So what I did last May 31st, so just a couple weeks before we met at the conference, is I took Charlie Papazian had posted at some point a clone of Orval. And that being one of the easiest beers to get that has a noticeable Brett character, even though I think they just finish it with the Brett, I thought, okay, this will be a nice base beer as far as just the grist and the hop addition is simple. Basically, I just took 11.5 pounds of Pils malt, and I just used domestic RAR Pils, and 0.5 pound of a 20L caramel malt, so 12 pounds, and 1 ounce of German Tradition for a 60-minute boil just to get some bitterness in there. And then, you know, looking at my notes, I did put 1 pound, which is approximately 2 cups, of white sugar to just sort of play into that Belgian style Belgian tradition of doing that.
Sure.
I don't remember if he had that in there or not, but I thought that would be an okay thing to do. So my starting gravity was 1057. What I did is I made it so I could end with 6 gallons of wort. I split it into 2 carboys, 3 gallons each, and all I did was dump in Y yeast, Brettanomyces clausenii, into 1 carboy. And then Y is Brettanomyces lambicus into the second one. And I've recorded kind of, you know, which one started faster and this and that. And I took some readings along the way. But ultimately, I brewed it May 31st. I bottled it December 30th. Because at that point, they were not changing much anymore in the gravity. The clausenii got down to 1010, and the lambicus got down to 1.004.
Wow.
So it went lower, and both were, you know, same exact wort, both were aerated the same. I did not make starters because I was figuring these smack packs could be pitched into 5 gallons, you know, as is. And so if I'm pitching it into 3 gallons, I just figured, I normally make starters, but that was adequate. You know, that was enough of a cell count. So, yeah, I let them sit long enough until they were not fermenting anymore, and then I bottled them. And now that was, you know, 5 months ago now that they've been in the bottles.
So did you keep them in the primary fermenter that whole time?
No, I actually racked to the secondary. This is something I learned from that paper I was talking about, is they were all surprised that the beers were done fermenting in like 4 or 5 days. And you hear about how Brett can develop its character over years. So they were just thinking that is, you know, maybe not that it would take years to ferment, but I think they were just thinking it would be a slower process. So I racked it out of the primaries 2 weeks after I pitched the yeast. And then from that point, the clausenii only dropped about 1 more point. So that was basically done after the 2 weeks. The lambicus dropped another 8 points. So that one, and as the picture, you commented to me that one of the pictures is really kind of yellowy. And the other one is more like a brown color, and that's because those are the pictures of the carboys, and that's because one of them had already dropped pretty clear. That was the clausenii, and the lambicus still had all kinds of yeast still in suspension. It was still working, and so that did take a lot longer.
So did you develop any kind of a pellicle or anything like that on the top of the beer?
I believe so. I do have you'll probably be able to post a link to my recipe, my log, but yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a picture right now, and there's definitely croizon. It's not really a pellicle in the same way that when I made a pseudo lambic a number of years ago, where you get this sort of really like bubbly Really an odd looking bubbly
kind of a powdery looking
thing on the, yeah, right. That can be part of it too. It wasn't, I don't remember it being like that as much as just being kind of just like a semi-normal looking Croizen.
But was that in the primary or did you see any kind of a development in the secondary?
I would have to check. I think by the time that I racked it, they were mostly done fermenting. I don't remember there being much of a pellicle to speak of. But, you know, your mileage may vary.
Now, did you give any thought to, and I'm going to open
I was just going to say, we could sample. And,
now, should I open these? Should we open these over the sink, or is there any danger of them blowing?
I don't think so, but I have not seen any bubbling over yet.
No, there's the Clausinii gave a little bit of a hiss.
Yeah, they should be a hiss, and there should be carbonation. Now, you will, as much as possible, try. There is some sediment. I did pitch ale yeast at bottling time, just some dried yeast, because I just didn't know if I could rely on the Brett. So just be a little mindful of that. Won't kill you, but, you know, it's nice to have it be as clear as possible, I guess.
Might lead to a more quiet night if we don't drink the sediment.
You and the digestive jokes. And Steve's not even around.
That's not. It's just reality. I'm telling you.
So, I'm going to be drinking these along with you guys, and you know, I look at these now, and they are about the same color, which makes sense, and they're pretty clear, and they were not the same color for some time, you know, until the one finally got done fermenting and sort of was dropping more clear.
So these were about 6 months in the fermenters, one and then the other.
Yeah, they were. Yep, that's about right. 7 months almost to the day total, from brew day until bottling day. But now they are almost 1 year old now, which is still, I think, from what I hear, that's still pretty young for a Brett beer. And I'm trying to not drink them up so I can have them around, but I have been enjoying them, so they're you know, they're good now. But
now I'm trying the Clausinii.
Okay, I will.
I'll be honest, I'm startled that it doesn't have more of a Brett in my face aroma. I'm really almost kind of disappointed in a way. I'm kind of was really, you know, because I really love that stuff, right? You know, so I was looking for it, and it's surprisingly clean. It's really quite pretty.
That was something that came out of that was in the paper that they started. I remember there was a sentence about, they expected this, they expected that, and then what they found was, you know, this, and they found that, and one of the words was clean. You know, they never expected that, and I thought, really? I mean, that piqued my interest too.
Yeah, this first one, the Clausinii, is Orvali, if I can characterize
adjective. Quickly, I'll just run through a few descriptions that I pulled out of when those people were reviewing their beers made with this strain. They talked about lemon, citrus, tart, apple, grape skin, white grape, lemon zest, and then there was a, quote, oddly clean description. Not funky. Other people listed light apple, pear, tropical fruit, mango. So I don't get as much of that type of fruit as, you know, kind of the white grape skin.
Yeah.
Little bit of the.
I could get a little of the lemon peel maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a little bit of astringency, I can definitely go with a grape, a slight grape flavor.
It's a little lightly puckering, not so much sour. It's not sour. It's it is a little musty.
Yeah.
But,
It reminds me a lot, and I'm sure you've heard me talk about many, many times my little Orval experiment where I made just a light hoppy, you know, lightly hoppy beer and put Orval dregs in the bottling bucket. It reminds me a lot of that beer.
Okay. Now, one thing I will point out that I learned after I made this beer, and if I was going to make it again, I may do differently, is what I learned is that if you aerate your beers that you're making with Brett like this, you will probably be decreasing the overall character of the Brettanomyces.
Hmm.
You're going to help them increase their cell count at a more rapid pace. And what that's going to do is, basically, if you want to get the most Brett out of this type of a process, then you would not aerate.
Mm.
And I learned this after the fact, and I had aerated. So, you know, Andy's comment is interesting because if I would not have aerated, both of these may have more Brett character, you know, even than they do.
You know, it might also explain why adding Brett at the end, when it then would be an oxygen-starved environment, it sets it up to take off, at least, and throw off its most unique flavors without having to do a whole lot of fermenting, really.
Yeah.
That could be, and I also wonder, some of those beers, I wonder how old some of them are or how long they were aged, because, you know, this one is not even quite a year old. This one may be, I mean, there's not a lot left for the Brett to do, but maybe in a year, maybe in 2 years, these beers even taste different.
Hmm. I don't want to quite finish this one. I want to try the next one.
Yeah.
This is a very, very tasty beer.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, unless you told me that it was Brett, I probably wouldn't have called it out as a Brett beer.
Hmm. Do you think that you would think that there was something?
Yeah, there is a little something, but I just don't know. It's not that kind of barnyard thing that I usually is the big red flag you usually get.
We just would have thought you were a careless brewer.
Right.
No, because it doesn't taste off.
No, it doesn't taste spoiled.
Yeah.
It just tastes a little funky, you know.
It is a little bit, but you're right. Water? I mean it proves that what you read about is true. You can make a beer that is not out there, not all that out there. Only using a Brett strain. You know, one quick note about this pronunciation. I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I asked my local homebrew guys. I said, does anybody know how to spell this or how to pronounce these words? I always want to say lambic, but they're like, you know, it's more like lambic. This would be more like lambicus. And I'm like, okay. And the second one, clasenii. It looks like clasenii, but it has two I's at the end. And right. I had more than one person say, actually, I'm pretty sure it's clasenii. And I thought, well, that gives the two I's, you know, that makes them do something then.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like Hawaiian, you know. When you go to Hawaii, if it's got two A's in the row, you say both of them. So we'll just go there.
Yeah, I like it. It's as long as I can remember to say it that way, I like it.
Well, we'll just pretend it's that way, and I'm sure we'll be corrected if it's
not.
We
will pretend. So, yeah, it'll be interesting when you get to the next one because, I won't spoil anything.
Yeah, yeah, don't spoil. We have rinsed. We've gotten some water.
Oh, I see. Are you not gonna have any more of the other one around?
Oh, we will. We will. But
oh, okay.
But we're clearing our we're clearing the way.
Oh, you're rinsing
your
palate.
Erasing the chalkboard or the whiteboard, as it were.
Okay.
Yeah, this one has a little more of a funky taste to it that the other one didn't have.
This is much drier. It's got less body.
This did go down to 1.004. And the other one was 1010.
Hmm.
So you're right on that. It is a lower final gravity.
It's more more watery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, just right offhand, I don't like it as much. I mean, you know, not slamming the beer, but I prefer the other one.
I will tell you a quick story. Up until last night, The only times I had drank these beers was drinking both of them, side by side. And every time I did that, I always preferred the Clausenii, and I always thought, oh, you know, the Lambicus, it's okay. I just don't like it as much. Well, last night was the first time that I did two things. One was I had bottled some of these in 750 Belgian, you know, bottles with corks. And that was my first time doing that. And last night I had a couple friends over. We were sitting outside, and I opened my first 750, and I was pleased that it was carbonated. I poured it out. We all got 6-7 ounces of this Lambicus, and it tasted great.
Hmm.
And we were only drinking that beer. And those other guys had had them side by side, and they agreed. Everyone that's done this has said the exact same thing you guys have just said, including myself. Oh, wow, you know, the Lambicus, it's kind of a little more musty. It's more funky. I just kind of like the Clausenii a little bit better. But on its own, the Lambicus tasted really great. And I just thought that that was really interesting. And it actually pleased me because, you know, I didn't want to feel like, oh, I got this beer that I don't like as much as the other strain. It's just have to drink it by itself, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's not that I don't like the beer. It's just that I like the other one better. I mean, this one, the Lambicus is more kind of watery. It's a bit more astringent.
I think it has a more interesting aroma. Stick my nose back in both of them and try and really get as much aroma out of them, I kind of like it. It has a little bit of a creaminess to it.
I agree. I think it smells. If you could have two glasses and smell the one and drink the other, then you're
yeah. Yeah, I think there is a little bit more going on in the aroma, and also there's just a little bit more going on in the flavor too. Some of the flavors that I wrote down that were in that paper for this strain is interesting. This first one is somebody said there was an aroma of cheese and toenails. And I thought, you don't want – that doesn't sound good, but you talk about wet horse blanket all the time.
Right, right.
So it's just kind of another way of saying that kind of a thing. Some people were talking about cherry, grape-like aroma, lingering dryness, or even oakiness. And, you know, I don't know, you know, all the beers they were drinking were made in different ways. And, but it was interesting that they were able to, you know, pull out all those different aromas and flavors of just the different strains. And there were, there were maybe two other strains that they were also using. So there's at least, I think, three or four different strains of Brettanomyces that you can buy.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder if, you know, Brettanomyces has got this reputation of being extremely funky or extremely weird or, you know, doing these weird things. I wonder if that is kind of a hangover from being pre-tamed. You know, what you've got is a single strain of each of these Brettanomyces varieties, right?
Yep.
And I'm just wondering if people were referring to Brettanomyces in the umbrella as in, you know, oh, no, this has got Brett in it, and maybe it's not one single strain of Brett. Maybe it's a bunch of Brett, you know, from a barrel or from, you know, being in a cool ship or something.
Right.
It could be that maybe this is part of the selection process that of taming these quote unquote wild yeasts. Does that make any sense?
I think it makes some sense, and I also wonder if there is something different about just using it exclusively in a wort instead of sort of finishing with it or putting it in the secondary or something like that. I mean, we've all probably had beers that were primarily fermented with a kind of a normal ale strain of yeast, but that end up having more Brett character than either of these beers.
Mm.
And right. I don't necessarily know how or why that is, unless it has partially to do with just more time of sitting around. But, you know, I'm thinking of, like, Avery has done some stuff. Some of their anniversary ones, I think, have had quite a bit of bread in it. And, you know, there's different breweries that are doing that nowadays. But, yeah, both of these are, even the Lambicus, even like last night when we were drinking it, it was, we couldn't believe how just easy it was just to drink and enjoy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, next to the Klausenii, it does seem like it's more musty and funky, but it's still on its own. It isn't what you would think you would get when you're making a beer with only a strain of Brettanomyces called Lambicus.
Yeah.
You know, you would think, and that's actually why I chose that strain. The Klausenii was reported to be one of the cleaner strains, and this one was reported to be sort of maybe one of the more funky and interesting ones. And I thought, I'll just go for those two. Then that seemed like a nice, you know, kind of some somewhat opposite effects, maybe.
I'm just wondering if you were to. I'm just wondering how to get more body into the Lambicus beer. I mean, if you mashed at a higher temperature and tried to get more, you know, sort of quote unquote unfermentable sugars into the wort, whether it would just go ahead and eat those as well, or
well, that's the problem, right? Is that this can convert and eat things.
I think you're right. In fact, I think one trick that some guys do is put in lactose because your ale yeast will not ferment that stuff, but the Brett will.
Yeah.
So in the brewing process, some guys will, you know, put some of that into the beer to give the Brett at least something, you know, to go on at the end after the ale yeast have already done whatever it is they're going to do. Looks like I mashed at 152. So, but I don't think it would matter. I think if I mashed higher, you know, I don't think it would matter. I think maybe it would slow it down a little bit, maybe. But I mean, I think that these final gravities are probably about what it would get to. You know what I mean? Given enough time.
I know that I think I read in Wild Brews that when it's used on its own, it is not super attenuative the way it can be as a supplement, because the other things that play a symbiotic role in, like lambics and other things, they actually play off of each other and keep driving more food source for the next thing to take a hold, and then they use, and then they eat, and then the next thing kind of builds on that. So that's where you get that really super attenuative nature. So it might be that you could fatten the beer up, you know, with some, you know, playing with the mash temperatures and stuff. and then just put it in a place where it just can't quite finish at all.
Yeah. I don't know about that. And you know, I'm talking to you not as an expert, in this field. This is my first time doing this. I mean, Michael Tonsmeyer has done this way more times than I have, but I'm on here just because I'm somebody that likes to experiment and you know, and encourage other people to do so.
And you sent us beers, so
well,
good beers.
It helps.
No,
but I don't know what you would. I'm not sure, Andy. That's interesting. I mean, I know when you are talking about a lambic kind of situation, you're talking about a lot more than just Brettanomyces.
Right. You've got things that are working in that relationship with each other. But in here, you've got this by itself. And so once it eats its entire food source, there's nothing to break other things down and continue the cycle. So, which is where you get those long, long, long fermenting of those kind of beers. Yeah, it's interesting. I think you hit on it earlier with the when you talked about the oxygen. That really seems to me to be an indicator of when you get these beers, when they get to tasting funky and throwing off their flavors. You know, I think you may be onto something.
But I still feel like that they would have to have something to consume, something to... If you just sort of dump it in there and it's not increasing,
right?
I don't know what it would be doing.
Well, you know, I've done some beers where you know, I will put the bread in near the end, you know, and I actually try to get it in so that it is in with only the priming sugar. So that the only thing it has to eat is the priming sugar.
Okay.
So that I'm only getting some Brett character, because the fear is that you'll bottle it and then it'll go into that cycle where it just keeps getting more and more attenuated and, you know, basically blowing up eventually,
right?
Breaking the bottle.
That's why when you're doing this kind of a thing, you do want to, unless you're kegging it, then it wouldn't really matter. But if you're going to bottle it, you want to make sure that it's done fermenting.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, and it was interesting. The Clausenii got to its pretty much its final gravity that it ended up being at 7 months after I made it. It got to that gravity in about 2 weeks, whereas it took the other strain quite a bit longer. It was dropping, well, let's see, 10.06. When was this? September. In September, it was down to 10.06. But then at the end of December, it went down to 10.04. So it just was dropping, you know, month after month, it was still dropping a little bit. But I do wonder if there's something, somebody could maybe write in if they're aware, but if there's something that Brett will not ferment, but that could add a little body. To me, when you drink a goose or some of these types of things, they are this low in final gravity. So it's more like a wine almost.
And maybe you make up for that in the mouthfeel by overcarbonating.
Or it's just sort of a different experience than a lot of the other beers that, you know, that we're used to drinking.
Right.
Mm.
Well, these are both exciting beers.
Yeah. Yeah, as they've come up to room temperature, they're really interesting. I mean, they were interesting to begin with, but of course, you know, as they warm up to room temperature, they're opening up, and there's more kind of fruit flavors coming through. I think that the Lambicus, the L one, is getting more interesting as it warms up. And it does smell good, and I mean they both taste good. I mean, like you said, these are both drinkable beers. I've had funky beers that, well, I rarely get a beer that I can't finish, but I've had one or two funky beers that it was just, you know, way too much shower drain or, you know, locker room or, you know, you name it. And it was like, holy smokes, just too much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've had, you know, oaky beers or you name the trick that you can throw into a beer. You can put too much into it. But these are well done. I think, you know, I think that these are funky without being way too overboard funky. And I, like Andy, am surprised that you can do that with a 100% Brettanomyces beer.
And that was my motivation to give it a shot, was to see if what these other guys were saying, if that was going to be my experience. And I could definitely see doing this again. I may or may not alter a strain or two, but I would definitely not aerate.
Yeah.
You know, a guy could even do the same wort, split it into two batches, and use the same strain, and then aerate one, and you know, not aerate the other. That type of experimentation. I mean, that's always possible, but I always come back to, well, how often am I going to do this, and do I want to take one of my rare chances to just figure out that, you know, factor?
Right. But that's six months is a long time to take up a couple of carboys in your basement or whatever.
Yeah, but I would definitely not aerate the next time, and just to see if I got somewhat of a different result. Because, like I said, you know, more than one of those guys in that horse of a different color paper were, you know, talking about that. Did you aerate or did you not aerate? That was always the question. So,
well, Don, this has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to tasting the other beers that you sent. And if you ever want to do something like this again, let us know.
I will, James. It's always fun talking to you, and I'm glad you liked them.
Well, thanks again to Don and to Andy. Those were some delicious beers. And as often happens after something like that, I have some ideas for some future brews of my own. Thanks to Don. Be sure to check out his stuff on YouTube, and be sure to check out Andy's store as well at thehomebrewery.com. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can find our DVDs on our website, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits as well. And you can also find our Brewer's Logbooks. We still have a few. You can log 50 batches of beer in those. And we've also got combo deals and shirts on our site, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are the Food Substitutions Bible. More than 6,500 substitutions for ingredients, equipment, and techniques. And Park Tool Machine Thread Storage Hook with Nut. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate link on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next way. Till next time, till next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.